Okay. Is everybody ready to get going? So this next section is almost no science, which is good. I'm going to try to give more sort of practical recommendations, and I'm going to do them from the perspective of 12 fitness tips from the world's fittest CEO. So a couple of years ago, I worked for a company where I was chief science officer. There's a competition that's held every year called the world's fittest CEO. And if you're C-level executive with a company of a certain size, you're able to come and do this event. So what the heck does that mean?
Right.
Fittest CEO is this. So when did I came in second in 2013, and I came in first in 2014 by how many seconds?
Less than a minute.
Yeah, 13 seconds, I think, over 3 days of 7 events. So it was a very stressful couple of days. This is what you did. On the first day, 3 days, 7 events. On the first day, road cycling, trail running, stair climb. Then the next day, mountain biking, where I got lost. Open water swim. PT test, and then the last day was has anyone ever done a Spartan race before? Where we have to climb over the walls and lift a thing and all kinds of crazy things that are there. So they score it over the whole days and then pick a winner. Fun thing to do. And so what I'm going to try to do is give you guys some tips to, a lot of these tips come back to controlling cortisol, but I'm done talking about cortisol. The reason that you want to control that cortisol is because it's going to increase this. It's going to increase your vigor. It's going to increase that sort of mind, body, spirit kind of a feeling where you just feel good overall. That overall well-being, that physical energy, that mental focus and mental acuity, all of that can come back if you do some of these. You don't need to do all 12 of these, obviously, but I've got 5 nutrition, I've got 4 fitness, and I've got 3 mental recommendations for you to try to get that vigor back into your body and mind, right? So it comes back to this idea of chi, life force, energy, vigor, prana, whatever word you want to put onto it, attitude, morale. So we'll start off with the nutrition ones. And stop me at any of these if you want me to go into any sort of details about why these recommendations. So this is my number one nutrition recommendation that I'll tell athletes, I'll tell professionals, I'll tell teenagers. We were just joking around before. I do some counseling with the U.S. ski team. And the snowboarders, who are all teenagers, who know everything, don't want to listen to anything that you say. But they will at least listen to this, which is eat a rainbow every day, right? The reason that you want to try to eat brightly colored fruits and vegetables and as many as possible is because the color of those fruits and vegetables is very indicative of the predominant phytonutrient that's there. So the reason that a blueberry is blue, and I'll talk about blueberries in a second, is because of these compounds called OPCs, oligomeric proanthocyanidins, right? Blah, 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 big word. But these anthocyanidins from blueberries, counteract the effects of cortisol. So even though we're stressed out and we have cortisol racing through our systems, these anthocyanins and flavonoids in general can protect us from those detrimental effects of cortisol. So flavonoids, in a certain way, are vaccines against stress. So the more blueberries that you can eat, the more berries that you can eat, blackberries, grapes, what else is high in flavonoids? Somebody mentioned this beverage that you're going to partake of later on. Red wine is very high in something called resveratrol, right? So one of the reasons that red wine is so healthy is because of the flavonoids, not specifically because of the alcohol that's going to de-stress you in a certain way, but those flavonoids are very anti-cortisol in their effects. And so something that I'll try to challenge people to do sometimes is try to get each of the colors of the rainbow, right? So don't focus on just getting lots of red stuff. Get some red stuff and some orange stuff and yellow and green and blue and indigo and purple. Get all of that together because each of those phytonutrients is going to be a slightly differently effective in the body, okay, in different areas. So lycopene, a carotenoid, is going to be more effective in the skin than the anthocyanins from blueberries, which are going to be more effective in the blood vessels and et cetera. So they have sort of different places in the body that they can predominate in their effectiveness. Does that make sense to everybody?
Strawberries are
very good. Strawberries are very high in vitamin C. They're okay in flavonoids in general, but they're probably not the first berry choice that I would go. I'd really go for blueberries. One thing about blueberries, I was saying to somebody this the other day, a half a cup of blueberries is probably the healthiest food that there is. Half a cup of blueberries will extend your life, right? The equivalent of a half a cup of blueberries in a mouse will probably increase that mouse's longevity by about 30%, right? So it won't be that much in humans because we've got so much other things going on, but pretty good food to be adding to your foods. They can be frozen, they can be fresh, they can be dried, they can be any of that. They can be in a smoothie, yeah. Smoothie is one of the best ways to get all of this stuff, right? You can put all of that stuff in a smoothie and blend it all up and have it down the hatch before you even head out the door for the day. Okay? So choose bright things and avoid the white things. I didn't even talk about that, but probably if you can just remember that, choose bright, eat the rainbow, but avoid as many white things as possible. White flour, white pasta, white breads, all of that processed stuff that's devoid of all of these phytonutrients. Okay? Yeah, that's a great question. So she asked if you took a supplement of these flavonoids, would you get the same sort of an effect? You could. Yeah, if you're the person who's not going to eat blueberries and you're not going to drink your red wine and you're not going to eat your sweet potatoes, or carrots and those sorts of things, you can supplement. One of the challenges with supplementation, though, is that, remember, I've said a couple of times in different contexts, there's a balance point. So too little is bad. Somewhere in the middle is what you want to shoot for. That's the balance point. That's the sort of Goldilocks position, right? The just right aspect. But with flavonoids, with carotenoids, with antioxidants in general, you can go too much and they actually start causing problems than the problems that you're trying to prevent. I actually just wrote a whole book about this concept where if you have too few antioxidants, it's bad. If you have too many antioxidants, it's equally as bad. You want to be someplace in the middle. And the easiest way to make sure that you're in the middle is to get it from your food, right? I am going to talk about supplements in just a little bit, but you really want to try to make it as sort of diet appropriate, diet matched, and don't go for big overdoses. Let me give you a quick example. This one, resveratrol from grapes, that's what's going to be in a glass of wine. So if you had a glass of wine every day for a week, right? You're going to get a little dose of resveratrol, a little bit Monday, a little bit Tuesday, a little bit Wednesday. You're liking how this is sounding, right? Little bit on a consistent basis. That's good for your heart. It's good for your blood vessels. It's good for your blood flow. It's good for your clotting of your blood, so your blood is nice and thin and flows well. It's good for your mental focus. It's good for your longevity, like the blueberry effect. But as soon as you start supplementing with it at a very high dose, most of the resveratrol supplements on the market are 1,000 times what you would get in a glass of wine. Now it's actually causing oxidative problems. It's preventing, in athletes, it's preventing your body's ability to recover from the exercise that you did. So like you can think of an athlete would go hit the gym, lift weights, that stimulation of lifting weights would make their muscles grow. You put a high dose of resveratrol in there, the muscles don't grow. There's something that's short-circuiting the body's signaling there. But if you take that small dose, like a red wine dose, you get the health benefits.
Do you get it only from red wine? No. Is there other alcoholic beverages that do that?
You can get the same effect, resveratrol effect, from grape juice. So if you want to avoid the alcohol, and you're like, grape juice, forget it. No, it's really a grape effect.
Anywhere in there?
No, it's real.
We had a question whether you can gem your wine. Don't submit wine on your executive reimbursement.
Yeah, it's really a grape effect, less so a wine effect, but wine is a very effective delivery tool. we'll say it that way. Did I see another hand go up? Yes.
Question about the supplements. I thought I've heard that supplements, your body doesn't process them like they would whole foods. So you might not get the benefit, or is that true or false?
Yeah, well, it depends on the supplement, you know. So a supplement you have to think of as, you know, a supplement of just resveratrol, since we're talking about that, is going to be just that. But if you eat a grape, you're going to get the resveratrol, and you're going to get a family of hundreds of other phytonutrients that might help that resveratrol work better, be absorbed better, be retained in the body better. So there's a bigger matrix effect going on with the food that you're not necessarily getting in a supplement. So I formulate supplements for a lot of companies, so I'm very pro supplement kind of a person, but that's a secondary choice. You know, it's food first, and you want to get that brightly colored rainbow, but if you're not going to get it, you know, the supplement is very much the second choice. It's, if it's appropriately formulated, it's better than not getting it.
How is that percolating with, like, what is it, the superfood?
Yeah.
Supplement that's got, like, everything in it.
Yeah, well, is that a particular brand, superfood supplement?
No, it's from a commercial.
Super superfoods in general. Yeah, well, superfoods in general, these are superfoods, right? Tomatoes are superfoods because they've got that lycopene. And sweet potatoes and carrots are superfoods because they have the beta carotene and et cetera, et cetera. So those are the brightly colored ones that ones that you want to...
Cherries good.
Cherries are great. Cherries are great because they're... Not only are they just they're good antioxidants, they're also very good anti-inflammatories. So it's another class of flavonoids that you could take a handful of tart cherries or a half a cup of, so 4 ounces of tart cherry juice, and it would be pain-killing as much as taking aspirin or ibuprofen. Right? So there's good studies on that too. And it's all from those flavonoids having those effects in the body. Okay, so that's the first one and the most important one. This is one that I like everyone to ask about, right? So we talked about stress eating earlier, and we talked about the question of, should I eat the cookie? And sometimes you should eat the cookie, but you should ask yourself this question. Is it calorie worthy? Is this a good enough cookie for me to spend those calories on? Or is it just junk? Am I just throwing it down my face because it's there and it's sweet and it's salty or whatever the case may be? So I think it's okay for you to have that great cookie, but make it a great cookie. Make it a great kind of ice cream. Make it a great, delicious, and enjoy it, and don't feel guilty about it. Does that make sense to everybody? Because you're getting that signal, right? That biological signal has to be listened to. You might have all the willpower in the world, and you're not going to do it, and you're not going to do it, and you're not going to do it, and then there you are. It's midnight, and your willpower is depleted, and you're doing it. And you feel terrible about it because it's a terrible gas station cookie, right? You know? I mean, we've all been there, right? I mean, so I do this. I need to share this with you. I do this for a living, right? And I talk to people like this all the time. And I'm still standing there looking in our pantry at midnight. And Julie will be go. She'll say, "Hey, smart guy, take some of your own advice. You're tired. You've had a long day. You're depleted. You did that kind of stuff." So like, that's the thing about sort of setting some rules around what are you going to do, what are you not going to do. This is one of those rules. Enjoy the thing that you're going to enjoy, but everything in moderation.
So it's not good to have a snack shack at your house?
Not so much. So, a better approach? If you're in the situation and you're craving that sweet, right? You're, instead of going for the cookie, instead of going for the ice cream, instead of going for the bad, quote-unquote, bad thing, you could do this. This is a nice way to get the sweet. You could go for a low-fat yogurt. It's going to have a lot of things in it. Calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, protein, probiotics, all kinds of good stuff, and that sweet, right? So as soon as you get that sugar and it hits your bloodstream and it hits your brain, it shuts off that biological signal. It's satisfying that bell that's getting rung in your brain saying, sweet, we want sweet, we want sweet, we want sweet. And you can do it with things like, here are my two of my favorite yogurts. Noosa is an Australian yogurt. Chobani is a Greek yogurt. They taste good. And they're, if you're getting that signal, that's a healthy way to shut off that signal that you're getting without falling off the wagon, so to speak. Okay? Practice pairing of macronutrients. So one of my big soapboxes that I get up on sometimes is that there are no bad foods, right? But there are bad combinations of foods, right? I would never want somebody to eat just a bagel. But a bagel with a little bit of peanut butter, a bagel with some salmon. So when you're combining the basic macronutrients, when you're combining your concentrated carbohydrates, you should never eat more than a fist size. So this is crackers, cereal, pasta. How many people have ever gone to a place like Olive Garden and been served this much pasta?
Never.
Never. Right? You get served this much pasta, as big as your head. What you ought to do is look at that and say, an appropriate serving of that concentrated carbohydrate, pasta, oatmeal, bread, is about the size of a fist. But you wouldn't sit down and eat just a fist-sized amount of pasta. You would want to combine that with a little bit of protein, so chicken breast, a little bit of prime rib. So not the, when you said prime rib before, you went like this, prime rib. You really want to go this, prime rib, right? Doesn't matter how thick it is really, but about a palm facing. Fruits and vegetables, you can have a on your plate. It would take up about this much room, right? So about half your plate. You could do two if you wanted to, if you want to have lots of fruits and vegetables. And then don't forget your added fat, which is about the circle that your index finger and thumb make when you make an okay sign, right? So everyone's trying to go like this. My hands are this big. If you do this, for most people, that's about 500 calories.
What's the added
per
fat?
Meal? Added fat would be butter or olive oil or full fat salad dressing, those sorts of things. So if you do all of that, and don't skip any of them. People look at this a lot. When I do this in a weight management class, people will look at this one and go, oh yeah. I'm gonna skip that because I'll save the calories. Why would you not want to do that?
Because then that's when you want to go get more of it.
Like, yeah, exactly. You skip this, and it makes all these others get absorbed faster. Your blood sugar spikes. Your blood sugar crashes. You get hungry again. And so this fat and this protein helps slow the absorption of the carbohydrates over here, so you feel fuller for longer. Yeah, it increases your satiety. And so you do this, you know, that is about 500 calories for someone with an average hand size. Bigger hands are going to be a bigger meal. Bigger hands are usually attached to bigger people who need bigger calorie intakes, right? So you do that, and it not only does it help you control your calories without counting them, so to speak, but it also blends them in a way that is absorbed the right way and keeps you fuller for longer. Okay?
So the notion that you shouldn't eat carbs, you know, all these no carb diets,
yeah.
like you could have that much bread at dinner.
Yep.
Or any meal.
Yep.
But this notion that you shouldn't eat carbs, you shouldn't have sugar, at least processed sugar, you shouldn't have added fat.
Right.
Tell me how you feel about that.
Yeah, so the whole sugar thing is off the rails right now, right? So sugar is very, very important. Your brain, one of your most important organs in the whole body, runs on sugar exclusively. That's the only fuel that your brain wants to use. Your brain can use things called ketones, which are breakdown products from fat metabolism, but it's like putting diesel in a gasoline engine, right? It can use it, but you get kind of foggy, you get kind of muddled, you feel a little bit loopy when you're burning ketones. It's not the right way to get perfect optimal brain function, right? Your brain wants to use high octane carbs, glucose. And you know, your brain makes up 5% of our body weight, and it burns 20% of our calories, right? So your brain, especially if you're using your brain, you're going to be burning a lot of calories, and you need the sugar.
Yeah, I hope that is true for everyone in here.
Yeah, exactly. It better be, right? Yeah, so you have to have a certain amount of carbohydrates. that's the amount that you want, right? Fruits and vegetables, no more than that, concentrated carbohydrates, and that's going to give you enough carbs to fuel the brain. It's going to give you enough carbs for a, there's a saying in metabolism that fat burns in the flame of carbohydrate, meaning you need carbs to give certain breakdown products that shuttle fatty acids into the part of the cell where they're metabolized. So if you're carb deficient, you're not going to be burning fat as efficiently as you can. It's one of the things we tell our athletes all the time, even weight athletes like wrestlers and lightweight rowers and gymnasts and people who need to keep their body weight really, really low. They do the same thing, like, I'm going to cut my carbs so I lose weight. We say, no. You need the carbs for your exercise, you need the carbs for your mental focus, and you need the carbs for your fat metabolism. And you just need to manage how many you're having. You know, I think it's perfectly appropriate for someone. Can I pick on whoever's drinking this Coke right here? Okay. You should not have very many of these, right? Because this is, not only is this concentrated sugar, but it's liquid sugar, which is metabolized completely differently than the kind of sugar that you're going to get here in a concentrated carbohydrate. So, you know, when someone's saying, like, I'm cutting sugar, this kind of thing you can cut and should cut. But the other kind you should have in sort of an appropriate blend.
Would you even recommend somebody drink one of those?
No, I think so. I'm gonna finally be the nutritionist that you probably thought you were getting today. This is poison, right? This is the worst. This is the worst food on the whole planet is soda. And not to say that I don't ever have it sometimes, right? Sometimes I like to go to Five Guys and get the burger and the fries are awesome there, aren't they? And a Coke. And I don't want to get a Diet Coke. I want to get a full sugar Coke or a Dr. Pepper or something like that. But I do it, it's a treat, right? And if you're doing it that way, great. But, you know, one of the things about, I have a friend who's a pretty high up level executive in Coca-Cola. So if he ever hears the recording that I'm making right now, he's going to freak out. Where was I going with that? That dose of sugar, it hits the body in a very, very addictive. I don't think saying it's addictive is an overstatement of it. I have a colleague at University of North Carolina who studies this, and his rats will choose soda before they'll choose cocaine and heroin. Yeah, it's that addictive because of the way that it's absorbed and metabolized. So to have it as a treat every once in a while, great. But you don't want to have it as like, it's a, you know, Coke and Pepsi and those sorts of drinks are, it's almost like the default order that people will do. They're like, what do you want to drink? Oh, I don't know, a Coke, right? Instead of saying water. Right, it's like it's the thing that people go to because it's so prevalent in our society. And if people really understood how it's affecting their bodies, they maybe wouldn't choose it as much. But it does taste good.
Diet Coke.
Diet Coke. Yeah.
You of all people, that's
yeah. One of the. So if you drink a Diet Coke, you're not going to get the calories. You're not going to get the sugar, right? So you think, good. What we're learning now is that two bad things are happening with those high dose artificial sweeteners. And in this drink that I'm going to talk to you about in a second, I use an artificial sweetener in this because I don't want to give a big dose of sugar, and we can't sweeten it with stevia, which is a sort of more of a natural way to sweeten something. So we use sucralose.
Why can't you see you?
Because it accentuates the bad taste of the herbs that are in here. Okay. So instead of tasting okay, it tastes really bad with stevia. So something like sucralose or aspartame or Ace K or one of those, you get the sweetness. One of the problems with that is that your body registers sweetness, but it doesn't register the calories. And so later in the day, you're probably going to eat those calories somehow. Your body's going to sort of look and say the ledger is off. I sensed about 300 calories of sweetness came in, and I can't account for that in my calorie load here. So I'm going to upregulate my appetite by 300 calories, so I'll be hungry for chips or something or something or something, and you'll end up eating those calories later anyway. So it's not really saving calories. The other thing that we're just learning now is that artificial sweeteners interfere with the balance of your gut bacteria. And so if you're doing, you have to do a lot of it. You have to drink a lot of diet soda in order to disrupt that biochemistry of your good bacteria to your bad bacteria. But if you're doing it all the time, you know, a couple of Diet Cokes or a couple of diet sodas every day, that might be enough to disrupt your good and bad bacteria. And that's affecting everything. It's affecting your immune system health. It's affecting your mood. It's affecting lots of different things. So I think diet sodas are probably out too. So I haven't given you guys any good news, have I? Except for, you know, a treat. Now and then. So water's good. Wine's good, I mentioned before.
What about like iced tea? You know, drinking.
I drink iced tea all the time. So one of the things about iced tea,
unsweetened
iced tea, you get a huge dose of flavonoids, those anti-cortisol compounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, so get it unsweetened and then sweeten it yourself, you know, up to a level that you need. So one of the things that's fun to do is to have somebody get an unsweetened drink and sweeten it to their taste. And then we'll do this with students. And then we'll show them how many spoonfuls they put in. Oh, I put in one, I put in two, and now it tastes good to me. Okay, how many is in that Coke? And you'll actually show them. You would never in a million years do that yourself. Go 6, 7, 8. You know, you see people, and you're like, no way, there's that much sugar in there. You know, so, but we don't realize until you sort of physically do that exercise.
So they always set you up.
Are there some sugars that are better than others?
Are there some sugars that are better than others?
Agave or coconut?
Not really.
Sugar is sugar.
Yeah, and that's actually a good thing that, you know, people are all freaked out about high fructose corn syrup. That's not necessarily any worse than cane sugar, and agave is not any better than cane sugar. Cane sugar now has a sort of healthy aura to it. You know, it's still sugar.
Honey
is not any better or any worse, right? So if you have a particular like or dislike, you know, go for what you like.
Raw sugar isn't any better than the white sugar.
No, same exact. Once it gets into your bloodstream, it's handled. It's broken down to glucose, and it's exactly the same. It's really, as I said before, one of the reasons that this is so bad is because it's liquid. It's absorbed quickly. It hits your body very quickly. It hits your brain very quickly. Versus the same amount of sugar in a food would take a long time to transit the system. Yeah.
So you're right. The news is saying sugar is just bad. So
mm-hmm.
You're not saying that.
Right.
So are there some levels where you say sugar is okay?
Yeah, so we think of it from the brain perspective, right? The brain's going to need about 100 grams of sugar every single day.
And how much is that?
That 100 grams is 400 calories of sugar, right? So someone who's on a low sugar or avoid sugar, how many spoonfuls is that going to be? I'd have to sit down and do the math. I don't know exactly. But this,
but you're
right?
You're getting sugar from all sources.
You're getting sugar from all sources. Exactly.
Sugar's everywhere.
Sugar's in milk. Sugar's in the snacks that we just had. There was sugar there. The beautiful vegetables plate that's back there, that's sugar. You know, all of those carbohydrates are sugar, but the difference of getting it in a food, even if it's a concentrated carbohydrate, like a pasta, for example, is that it's much less concentrated than it is in a spoonful of sugar or a sugar drink, like what we've been talking about.
So if you were eating a balanced diet, like you were following, how many grams of sugar would be in that?
This kind of thing would give you about, this would probably give you about 200 grams of sugar, of carbohydrate throughout the day, right? So about double what your bottom line level would be, right? But that's a, you know, that's a level where you're going to be able to metabolize fat appropriately. You're going to be able to enjoy your food. You know, the paleo is a big hot thing, which is based on zero science, actually. let me tell you how I really feel. But the basis of those low carbohydrate diets, right? Even Atkins, right? People would say to me back in the Atkins day, they'd go, "Yeah, Atkins, that's the diet where I can eat as many cheeseburgers, hold the bun, as I want," right? And I go, no, if you actually read it, it's salmon and salad and avoid white bread, right? Fine, I'm totally fine with that kind of thing because you're going to be eating so many fruits and vegetables on a diet like that, you'll get all your carbohydrates. So, and your sugar.
So really, I guess what kind of what you said is you're getting the sugar that you need.
Right.
So you don't really need to add sugar per se.
You don't need to add sugar, right? But you can also...
Some form of flavor is okay.
That's right. That's exactly right.
In moderation.
In moderation. And I'm a sugar guy, right? I like sugar. I like my sweets. I like my cookies. I'm not really a cake guy necessarily, but I like that kind of stuff. And one of the reasons that I exercise the way that I do is to create a deficit so that I can have those kinds of things, right? It's still not healthy for me, so-called, but at least I've created that deficit of running 5 miles. Now I can have 500 calories more stuff that might not necessarily come from a healthy food. Okay?
A Diet Coke.
Right. Yeah, right. I could if I wanted to.
500 calories.
So more omega-3s. Now here's a place where I think a supplement does match the food source of it. So you've all heard this before. You want to eat more fish and you want to eat more fatty fish. One of the problems with the eat more fish recommendation is that people will end up eating fish like flounder and tilapia and halibut and things, which are all delicious fish, especially when they're cooked in these yummy sauces. But the fish that have the high omega-3s are the fishy fish, things like mackerel and bluefish and salmon. And everybody makes a face just like the face that you're making right there, right? Ew. I don't like the fishy fish, but those are the ones that have the omega-3s that are going to be anti-inflammatory and good for your brain and good for your skin and good for your stress response. So if you're not going to eat those fish to do all those wonderful things, a fish oil supplement is just as good. And the one that I recommend, I don't have any affiliation with any of these products that I'm recommending, but this one, Nordic Naturals, this is the one that we buy and that we have at the house. They do a good job of what I think is a balance between purity and cost. So you can buy higher purity fish oil, but it's really expensive. It's almost like pharmaceutical level. And then you can buy, you know, the bargain base. You can go to Costco and buy a vat of fish oil soft gels, and they're cheap, but they're not the greatest quality, and they're going to give you fish burps, and they're going to go rancid before you even finish them because there's 1,000,000,000,000 of them in there.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Fish burps.
Yeah, you've never had the fish burp? The pleasure of the fish burp? Yeah, if you take a low quality fish oil, it's going to come back on you throughout the day, and it's you're not going to like it. I do, yeah. Yeah.
I used to make a thing
of Yeah, and you had to taste it. Ooh, disgusting.
Cod liver oil.
Yes.
You say wild salmon is farm raised.
No, farm raised is. There was a time when there was a big difference between wild and farm raised. Farm raised was junk. Now the farm raised is pretty equivalent to wild, in terms of omega-3 level, in terms of toxin level like PCBs and things like that. The people who do the fish farming have gotten a lot better at feeding an appropriate diet, keeping the fish free from infections and all that kind of stuff. So.
About the mercury levels in these predator fish?
Yeah, so the higher up the food chain you go, so to speak, when you get into, you know, mackerels and salmons and things like that, they're eating the smaller fish, and so there's a concentration of lead and mercury and PCBs and things like that. I think that the health benefits of the omega-3s outweigh the potential risk of those sorts of things. Of, you know, so there used to be a recommendation of don't eat these fishes more than 3 times a week. I think that that's kind of going away, that there's more of a benefit of eating them more often than limiting your intake of them. So I think that's where the science stands right now.
Sardines
are wonderful because they're low on the food chain, but they're high on the omega-3 chain. So yeah, sardines are wonderful. Anchovies are wonderful. Smelts are wonderful, but they're not the kind of fish that people generally eat.
Is that a substitute? And more?
Krill, I'm not a big krill fan because krill, so compared to something like this, a pure fish oil supplement, krill is going to be lower in omega-3s, but higher in these phospholipid kinds of compounds, which are well absorbed, but what you're really going for is those omega-3s, so I actually don't think you need the other things. And the krill, most of the krill just, you get krill burps, which are even worse than fish burps, you know, so...
How about flaxseed if you're just not a fish person, getting it
increased
or something?
And if you're a vegetarian, flaxseed is going to be the next best choice. They're not as good, but if you're not going to eat the fish and then you're not going to supplement with the fish, then flaxseed's choice three.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You can get enough of it?
Yeah, because...
You have to eat such a high quantity to get what you need.
Yeah, but the problem with doing that then is that flaxseed is going to be a blend of omega-3s and omega-6s, and so you're supplementing with both at the same time, and a lot of vegetarians already have plenty of omega-6s. So I think adding some flaxseeds is okay to do, but you don't want to try to take too many of them. And fish is this is another example of you can take too many of these. I take 2 grams a day is the recommendation that I recommend for people. That's enough to give you the benefits: anti-inflammatory, anti-cortisol, blood flow, brain benefits, all that kind of stuff. If I take much more than that, I'll actually get bloody noses because my blood gets too thin. But I know people who take 10 grams a day, which is like what Eskimos might eat, you know, from a huge intake of fatty fish. You don't want to go to that level. You don't need to go to that level. 2 to 3 grams a day is going to be plenty. Okay? Okay, so supplementation. I am an advocate of supplements where there's good science. So I've kind of broken these into the same sort of theory here: body supplements, mind supplements, and spirit supplements. Two of my favorite ones are turmeric and green tea. You can drink green tea. You can sprinkle turmeric on your food. I know plenty of people who travel with a little thing of turmeric in their backpack or their purse, and they sprinkle it on their sandwiches and things like that. They sprinkle it in their soup. These are both anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, so they're going to protect every single tissue in the body. They're going to be good for the liver. They're going to be good for the kidneys. They're good for the brain, good for the blood vessels, good for everything in the body. Those are two of my top supplements, or, you know, food, drink, spices to add.
What's the difference between the capsules of turmeric versus the powder?
So one of the problems with turmeric powder is it's poorly absorbed if you take it just by itself. If you're taking turmeric and you're sprinkling it on food and you have a little bit of fat there, you're increasing your absorption of turmeric and you're probably going to be perfectly fine there. As soon as you take that turmeric powder and you put it into a capsule and you just take it on an empty stomach, it's going to be very poorly absorbed. So a lot of the supplements will combine that in a soft gel with a little bit of oil, or they'll mix it into a phospholipid that will be better absorbed on an empty stomach. So if you're taking your turmeric with food, you're fine. You don't need to worry. If you take it with a supplement, you probably want to get one of those sort of higher tech turmerics, and then take it with food. Would be even better for your absorption. Does that answer your question? Okay. Some of these ones for the mind, what I call with my athletes, brain ergogenics. And I won't get into this because I do a whole talk on this idea of your brain being your most important performance organ, that, you know, everybody can train themselves to the same level, but then the difference between winning the gold medal or not qualifying for the finals is because of your brain. It's getting your brain to push your body to a higher level. That's brain ergogenics. These supplements are in that sort of category, not from a sports performance perspective, but from a perspective of getting our best work done in the space of time that we have allotted to work it out. New Zealand pine bark, theanine, corngrass, and American ephedra. And so this is this drink. So this is, it doesn't have a label on it, so some people might be scared of taking an unlabeled product, so I'll tell you what's in it. It's these four ingredients plus a couple of others. This is a product that my daughter and I are just launching. We started a company last month and got it funded on Kickstarter. We're doing stress cookies, and we're doing this, which is stress tea. So this is a blend of all of these ingredients. I'll show you what it does in just a second. I've got a data slide, but it reduces negative mood state and increases positive mood state, and I'll show you what those are in a second. But this really gets you to focus better. New Zealand pine bark and theanine have been studied for ADD. So you can think of these as like natural Ritalins in a way. They work completely, completely differently in the body. Ritalin's a stimulant. These are really neurotransmitter balancers. We give these to our kids to help them focus in school.
So where can you...
So if you want to find this, so New Zealand pine bark, there's a brand called Enzogenol, E-N-Z-O, so Enzo, G-E-N-O-L, Enzogenol. And you can just go on Amazon and type in Enzogenol, and you can order little capsules of it. That's in these blends. Theanine, the brand that I recommend is called Sun Theanine, S-U-N, and then theanine just as you see it there. The reason I recommend those two is because those are the two that have been studied the most in research studies for mental focus and stress relief and acuity and memory and things like that. This corn grass is a really, really interesting supplement. So it's just what you think it would be. When a corn plant grows, when it first pokes out of the ground, it looks like grass. And they cut that off and they extract it. And there's a compound in there that's similar to melatonin. Different from melatonin, but similar in structure. It's called 6-MBOA. It has a really nice relaxation effect. So it doesn't make you sleepy, but we did a study a couple of years ago where we studied brainwave patterns in people while they were sleeping. And some groups got supplemented with corn grass, some got supplemented with a placebo. And the people with the corn grass they fell asleep faster, they stayed asleep longer, they spent more minutes of however long they slept. They weren't sleeping 8 hours, but if they were sleeping 6 hours, they spent more of those 6 hours in REM sleep, in those deep stages of sleep, and they had overall better sleep quality. So it's a different, it doesn't knock you out like a, you know, like an Ambien would or a Tylenol PM or something like that. So it's not that kind of a sleep drug, but it helps you get better sleep quality. And the brand that we studied is you can find it on the market, it's called Maizenol. So maize like corn, M-A-I-Z-I-N-O-L. So that's something that can be. And then the main ingredient in this stress tea is American ephedra. Has anybody ever heard of ephedra before? What is it? What did ephedra do? Ephedra's not on the market anymore.
It's
a stimulant.
Weight loss
stimulant, exactly.
Caused some people to die.
Yeah. That's why they took it off the market, right? Caused high blood pressure and heart rate and death, which is a bad side effect to try to come back from, right? You don't want to get death. You look great in the casket. Yeah. So 10 years ago, FDA took it off the market. And so that was a version called Chinese ephedra, ephedra sinensis. This is American ephedra, ephedra viridis. So you can, look out the window, I guarantee there's some of this growing on the hillside up here. It's a little green plant, and so the Mormon pioneers that settled this area would brew this into a tea. They called it Mormon tea or Brigham tea. It doesn't increase blood pressure, doesn't increase heart rate, but it has the same sort of energy, fat metabolism effects that the Chinese ephedra had. So that's the main ingredient in this, and I'll show you some data on it in just a second. And then spirit supplements, I've got two, probiotics and beta-glucan. These work on the gut and the immune system. What we're calling these days the gut-brain axis. So what's happening with your bacteria in your intestines is actually being transmitted to your brain, and then that's being transmitted to the rest of your body. So if your gut bacteria is out of balance, you're going to feel terrible. If your gut bacteria is out of balance, you're going to be hungry for bad foods. You're going to be more likely to gain weight. You're going to be more inflamed and probably more in pain and more stiff and inflexible and things like that, just because of what's going on in your gut. So you can supplement with probiotics. You can supplement with this yeast extract called beta-glucan to help normalize what's going on in the gut, okay, to help the rest of your body. Yeah?
How do you feel about Plexus, Edicare, all supplements, probiotics?
Yeah. Probiotic supplements are a pretty black box right now. We don't know how they work. We know how they work. We don't know how effective they are, and we don't know what the most effective blend is, right? So I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, a media outlet. They were doing a story on probiotics, and the question basically was, is yogurt enough? And I kind of said that at this point, I think I have to say, yeah, it kind of is. That's probably as much as we know. If you eat yogurt, you're going to get good bugs. You're going to get good carbohydrates. They're going to feed those bugs, prebiotics, and that's probably going to be generally good for your gut, right? We know that populations that eat more fermented foods, more yogurt, more kefir, more, you know, kombucha is a hot fermented kind of a tea right now. Yogurt's good, yeah, really good. But when it comes to supplements, we don't know what strains are best. We don't know what blend of strains are best. We don't know if you look at a probiotic, they're going to be measured by these things called CFUs, which stands for colony forming units. You know, people are now looking for the supplement that has the most CFUs. Is 10 billion good? Is 20 billion better? We have no idea. You know, so that right now is the Wild West. We just don't know. We know that there are certain good bugs that you want. We know there's certain bad bugs you don't want. And we know that diversity of bugs is really important. That's about all we know. And outside of that, it's really hard to make any firm recommendations. So, okay. There's another reason that having carbs in your diet is a good thing, because it feeds those good bacteria. Okay? So are there any other questions about supplements? So I brought these. Let me say this before I forget. Each bottle of this is 4 servings. Okay? Let me say it again. Each bottle is 4 servings. I made the mistake of giving one of these to one of my friends who's a pretty elite level rower. And he took it with him on a row. He rows a single. And he took it and he just figured, one of Sean's Gatorades, you know? And he drank all 4 servings during a 2-hour row. And boy, did he have a good workout. So this is going to give you energy, but it's also going to reduce stress and do that mood state thing. And I think I have a slide of it. I do. So we presented this study at American College of Nutrition and American College of Sports Medicine just recently. We looked at it for its ability to increase resting metabolic rate. So could it give you the effect of like old ephedra from a fat burning perspective? And it did. What you're looking at is a control group, a single serving, which is 4 ounces, and a double serving, which is 8 ounces. And the double serving didn't really do significantly any better. So just drink 4 ounces if you're going to give it a try. Because here, when you look at negative mood state, the single serving went 41% reduction in negative mood state. That's things like stress, tension, irritability, and anxiety as a sum, and then positive mood state went up 100%. So things like energy, mood, focus, well-being. So this is our attempt to get the negative effects of stress down and the positive effects of vigor up in the same beverage, right? A lot of times those are considered to be opposite things. Like you'll take a product to de-stress you, but it also makes you sleepy. And you'll take another product to energize you, but it also makes you anxious and irritable. And we were trying to get the sort of the sweet spot of that, and we think we did it. So those are there for anybody who wants to try them. Mango, peach, and fruit punch, if you want different flavors.
How many carbs are in the
orange? Zero, because we use sucralose, right? And sucralose, up until about 2 weeks ago, was the one sweetener that I would use without one artificial sweetener I would use without reservation. Mostly because sucralose, it's based on the sucrose molecule, table sugar molecule, but it's not metabolized in the body. So you don't get any calories out of it. The gut bacteria don't seem to do anything with it. It just goes right through. A study came out 2 weeks ago that showed that high doses of sucralose do seem to interrupt gut bacteria. It's a massive, massive, you'd have to drink more than I even brought to get that dose of sucralose. But at least it points to this question of, if you don't have enough carbohydrates, which these bugs feed on, then it's probably going to be a problem. So we don't know yet if it's a sucralose problem or a lack of carbohydrate in general problem, but at least that's out there, and there used to be nothing out there. So,
what do you know about like the sucralose and any of the false sugars related to mental issues, dementia? I've heard some studies about that.
Yeah.
Not so much the sugar and insulin stuff, but now the mental.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think that it causes those conditions, dementia or Alzheimer's or anything like that. But in those situations, you've got a compromised tissue, right? The brain and the neurons are not working the way they're supposed to work. And now if you put in something that's going to interfere with their ability to metabolize carbohydrates, you could exacerbate the condition, not cause the condition. Does that make sense? So like if those tissues are having problems with carbohydrate metabolism anyway, and now you're giving a non-carbohydrate carb,
right,
potentially you could get some confusion.
But the study that was presented to me was more about the chemical process of taking the raw sugars or whatever base they use, chemicalizing them to create the false sugar, and that's what caused the mental.
I don't think that's true at all.
Okay.
I don't think that's true at all. In fact, in some of those cases of Alzheimer's or senile dementia, the fact that that neuron is not now able to use carbohydrate the way that it wants to, things like coconut oil are wonderful ways to get around that, because now here's this energy source that the brain will use because it's being blocked. So those kinds of brain conditions sometimes are called diabetes type 3, mm-hmm, because there's a dysfunction in carbohydrate metabolism, which is causing the brain to not be able to do its thing. And if you can get around that with one of those fatty acids, then sometimes it helps.
Okay.
So.
You take any protein supplements?
I do, yeah. I had a protein shake for breakfast this morning. And there's
whey
is what I almost always have, yeah. So when it comes to a protein supplement, the reason most people take a protein supplement is because they want to lose weight or they want to gain muscle. And if those are the two things that you're looking for, whey is far and away superior to anything that's out there. Way better than soy, way better than casein, way better than, you know, any of the vegan sources, brown rice protein or anything like that. Hands down, whey crushes. They're all about the same. All about the same. I buy one now just off of Amazon. I just started buying this. It's unflavored. It's from a company called Bulk Supplements. And if you just typed in Bulk Whey, I'm sure it would be the first hit. It's cheap. It's clean. It's unflavored. You can add it to any smoothie. You can add it to your oatmeal. You can add it to anything like that. So we're getting in on time here. So I've just got a couple of last ones here. We talked a little bit about exercise. This is something I hope everybody does, and it sounds like you have the atmosphere in this company to make something like this happen. Your most important meeting of the day ought to be your workout. And unfortunately for so many people, this becomes the thing that you push to the end, and you push and you push, and something else takes precedence over your workout. And so if you have to do it in the morning, if you have to carve this out at lunchtime, if you have to do it after everybody goes to bed, whatever it is, carve that time out, because it's so good for your brain, it's so good for your body, it's so good for your deconstruction of cortisol to get that back to where it needs to go. If exercise were a pill, it would be the wonder drug of the century. Yes.
How much per week?
So, you know, it's better to do a little bit every day. You know, so a little bit on a frequent basis is much more effective than a lot infrequently. So 30 minutes a day would be the ideal thing for people to do.
7 days a week.
7 days a week. Yeah, it's 6 days a week. I think one day off where you're not doing anything at all is important.
Constitutes exercise.
So any kind of physical activity, right? My favorite way to do exercise is to do, of that 30 minutes, do what you might recognize as interval training, right? Fast and slow, fast and slow, fast and slow. One reason that's really important is because we did a study a couple years ago. We took people who didn't have time to exercise, right? The number one reason that people don't exercise. We gave them 28 minutes of either steady state. They went out and they just sort of strolled along at whatever pace they were going to do. That's you. Yeah, that's what you just said. Or take that same 28 minutes and go 1 minute hard, 1 minute easy. 2 minutes hard, 2 minutes easy. 3 minutes hard, 3 minutes easy. 2 minutes hard, 2 minutes easy. 1 minute hard, 1 minute easy. Add that up, that's 28 minutes. Do a 5 minute warm up, 5 minute cool down. You're in and out of there. Just doing the hard easy made cortisols go down 20% more, made them burn more than double the calories. So in the steady state, they burned 189. In the hard easy intervals, they burned 401. Okay, so you're going to burn more calories, you're going to get a good cortisol response, and we measured mood states after, and their mood state was better. Less tension, less anxiety, that kind of stuff, after the hard stuff. So same amount of time, they got a lot more bang for their buck. Okay, don't do any junk workouts. So this goes to the point of people will sometimes exercise every day, or they'll go to the gym and they'll be there for 2 hours and they think they need to. You don't need to do that. You can do 28 minutes, good quality, do the hard work, get in, get out, go home, you're done. Okay, you really can get all that work done in a very, very short period of time. And it's good to mix it up. Yeah? Okay, it's good to mix it up too. Like, you know, you don't want to be just a runner or just a bicyclist or just a weightlifter. If you can mix it up and hit all those different body parts and those different energy systems, that's the way to do it. I mentioned this, get in, get out, recover. So here's me, right? I do a lot of Ironmans. I do ultra marathons. I do long distance things. And I train less than anybody that I know because it's good quality. You get in there, you have a focus, just like your work, right? We're in this meeting, not for 2 hours. We're in this meeting for 45 minutes. We're going to get it done. We're going to get something accomplished. We're going to get out of there, okay? And then take a full day off each week. A day off means, and we do this even with our high-level athletes. You know, Michael Phelps even takes a day off to recover. Remember I said before that it's not so much about avoiding the stress or managing the stress. It's about having that high stress out there, but matching it with recovery, matching it with eating the right way, matching it so that you're resilient. And that's a different concept than stress management. We still want to be able to do all the things that we want to do in our lives, professionally and socially and with our families, but we also want to be able to match that with our ability to recover. And if you can do that, you can come back and you can do a lot of good stuff. We talked about sleep. Maybe I'll just say one quick word, and I'll manage electronic interruptions and leave the cell phone behind. If you guys can do this, I just got some people gave sideways glances to the people who are sitting next to them. And I don't know which, now it's even if the phone is sitting there and it's flipped over so the screen is down, it's still there and it's still occupying a part of your mind. You're still waiting for the ring, right? You can't be fully present with that person who's there. This can be really, really important for your relationships, for your stress levels, just to let you unhook for a little while, right? So don't even bring it, right? Leave it there. Do your exercise without your cell phone if you're able to do that, right? I don't think any of us are putting out fires or doing brain surgery or, you know, that kind of thing, right? You can probably leave your phone for 30 minutes and get that psychological benefit at the same time you're getting a physiological benefit.
You mean when you work out?
When you work out, like, so a lot of my workouts, I don't even take my phone with me, right? I don't bring it. I don't put it on the bicycle. I don't put it in my pocket. I'm out there. I'm getting a psychological release at the same time I'm getting a physiological release. And that can be really important just to give yourself that disconnect time. Okay, so with that, I know we're getting close to your next event on the calendar. So I really appreciate you guys giving me some time today. And if I can help you out with anything, just let me know. Call me, email me, anything like that, okay? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was so good. I think that deserves another round. Not good for yourself.